Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. July 18th, 2019, thank you for joining. We've got some very interesting information to go over today, something that is really breaking news at the moment in regard to Iran and the situation we covered yesterday, as well as the United States actually shooting down an Iranian drone in international airspace, like hours before this show started. So it's important to go over all of this information today and see how this relates to yesterday. And in fact, it turns out that Iran lied about rescuing the ship on Sunday, but not in the way you might be thinking. We'll get into all of that and how and ins and outs and my opinions on all of it. At the same time, as usual, the United States, as I just said, escalated the situation that has yet to be fleshed out or investigated, as usual, and again, took out the Iranian drone, which is essentially supposed to be a step after this event that, again, has yet to be investigated or fleshed out, which is important to recognize how the U.S. continues to carry itself out like this. Now, we'll get into that story, as well as some obvious Epstein ties to the Israeli government, which in my mind would suggest a Mossad connection. Turkey is now calling out the lack of what they're saying is legitimate justification for the U.S. to sanction or penalize other nations for dealing with U.S. adversaries. Very important thing coming from a NATO ally. And of course, as I said, I would follow up some developments yesterday in regard to congressional bills that are likely to get vetoed by Donald Trump, but are great steps nevertheless. But to begin today, for the first part of this story, this coming from Press TV, following up from our coverage yesterday entitled Revolutionary Guard Says It Seizes Fuel Smuggling Tanker Near the Strait of Hormuz. Now, let's go over the most recent developments in this story from today, and I'll follow up with my thoughts on what all this means, how it plays in with the story from yesterday, and why it played out the way it did, and the information surrounding that. But let's go over the stuff coming up today. Now, this is exactly why we must be skeptical of all sides, just as I stressed yesterday. Now, clearly, as I said yesterday, my opinion was that it seemed Iran's story was most logical, because taking in the history of the events around all this made the most sense. But no one knew for sure, as I made sure to tell you, and made sure to make very clear that we should be skeptical, as I always say, question everything, including the claims from the other side. Because, as you're seeing now, as it turns out, Iran lied about rescuing a ship in distress, or at least that's how it seems at this stage of the story. And that's what Iran is claiming at this point. But considering the hostile environment that has been created right in Iran's doorstep, the way they claim this played out might not be as crazy as it first appears. And really, consider what the U.S. would do in reverse if this was happening in the reverse situation. Where there were fleets of Iranian ships circling about the east coast of the United States, just outside U.S. national waters. I think you know how that would go down. But of course, it's in the reverse, it's the U.S. that's being attacked while they're encircling Iranian territory. Based on claims Iran made about U.S. actions, but failed to prove any of them. Important to think about that. Now, according to Iran's statement, the Revolutionary Guard naval forces, which were patrolling the waters on an anti-smuggling mission, they claim, acted against the vessel in a surprise operation upon ascertaining the nature of its cargo and securing the required legal approval from Iranian authorities. That's what they're saying. But this took place on Sunday, the same day Iran had claimed to have rescued the UAE operated out of the UAE, I guess, but Panamanian flagged, was the RIA, which we talked about. They said it was in need of repairs and due to technical problems. However, neither Iran's military nor the media identified the seized vessel or its country in their initial statements, which again should have raised red flags. And now we're beginning to see why there's confusion, or rather intentional vagueness, coming from both sides. Now, the ship had loaded the fuel. And this is what they're claiming. The ship had loaded the fuel from Iranian dhows and was about to hand it over to other foreign vessels in farther waters. The vessel, which they said had 12 foreign crew members aboard at the time of the seizure, they claim was capable of carrying 2 million liters of fuel. But so they're claiming that they have evidence that this ship was taking Iranian oil and trying to smuggle it elsewhere interesting while Iran is being strangled by the United States to not allow that fuel to get out. So it would make sense, especially knowing how coveted this fuel is by the West and the United States specifically. It seems to suggest that it's likely that this ship we're talking about, if this story is to be believed, is potentially a U.S. or U.S. ally involved in this. Because it doesn't really make sense why anybody else would try to sneak in and steal Iranian oil. But of course, it could be anything at this point. But later on Thursday, today, later in the day, Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, who is in New York right now to attend a meeting of the United Nations, on a side note, a ridiculous story about how the United States limited his travel, where he's only allowed to go from the U.S. to his hotel or whatever it was, is just, again, ridiculous. But you probably saw that, but I don't want to get distracted by that story. I think that's what it was meant to do. But he's in New York right now, meeting at the United Nations. He told reporters that the vessel seized by the Revolutionary Guard was not actually a tanker, but was a small ship used to smuggle 1 million liters, not 1 million barrels, of crude oil. He says, quote, "We do this, inspecting ships, every day. These are people who smuggle our oil." This is according to the top diplomat. Now, again, it should go without saying, at this point, they lied for whatever reason, and we'll get into that in a second. So we should be at face value right now, questioning whether or not they're simply lying again. Now, that's not to discuss whether or not their lie is for a good reason or whether they feel like they're in the right, the same way that the U.S. would claim. But at face value, we have to begin to question all claims, as we always should. But we can see that they're playing this up from either side to use for propaganda purposes. But as it's clear to you if you watch this show, it's very obvious who is the one that's the aggressor in all of this. Regardless of whether Iran is playing the game back at this stage or always was, all of this stems from fake information coming from, right now, the Trump administration, stemming from Israel to demonize Iran based on nothing. Again, as I've always pointed out, every single claim before all of this, all of them, have yet to be proven that Iran was, in fact, the one that was behind any of it. Coming from a country that has routinely lied about and manufactured events all throughout history. It's interesting, we should think about that. Now, for the next development of this story, Iran did, in fact, release video. Not, you know, simply just showing that this was the Riyadh, which was interesting, because this is how this story developed, is all of, right after this came out, all the mainstream media was saying, oh, well, Iran said it seized a ship, but have yet to confirm if it was the ship from the other day, and it went on and on, all this morning. And so they said, okay, well, here's video. It is the Riyadh. This is what happened. They said that they seized it because of the example, the reasons I said a moment ago, that they were smuggling fuel. Now, they released this footage as it was, that they claim, as the Revolutionary Guard was seizing the Riyadh, the ship that they claim was smuggling oil. Now, here is the actual footage, so you can see for yourself. And you can see very clearly that this is the Riyadh. You can see that. But again, is this what they say it is? Is this, in fact, a fuel smuggling ship that they're stopping? Or is this the video of them so-called rescuing the ship? I mean, who knows at this point? We should be questioning their claims. But what we know, the way this has played out so far, is that the idea, at least at what they're saying right now, is that the idea of the rescue simply didn't happen. So they fabricated that story to cover for whatever this was. That's what's interesting to think about. Why would they need to do that? What purpose would it serve to lie about a rescue in order to then take what would be an illegal ship anyway? Could it be that they're concerned about how this would have been lied about, misrepresented by the mainstream media? So instead, they manufactured a story to, first try to get evidence to prove. I mean, there's plenty of ways we could look at this. It's not always as cut and dry as the mainstream media and the U.S. government want you to believe it is. But we should be questioning Iran's claims of the story, just like we're questioning the U.S. story. Now, first, it's important to consider at this stage of this very clear information war that even the video you're looking at right there is what they say it is. Or could have been altered in some way, let's say. Maybe they changed the name on the back of the ship. I have no reason to believe that. But when we say question everything, that does not mean only the Western claims. Question everything. Be open to everything, including Western claims, including Iranian claims, but be critical and skeptical of all of it. And in this case, Iran did just lie. Maybe for a strategic reason, but still a lie. Now, it would seem, based on this information, that someone was trying to smuggle Iranian oil out of Iran, at least as the Iranian story goes, and Iran moved to stop them. They turned off their transponder, likely because Iran knew who they were. Now, why would Iran lie about this is really anyone's guess. But it would make sense to assume that Iran knew that this was an illicit action that the guilty parties would not want known. Say, for instance, the U.S. or somebody else involved. Which would explain why the U.S. and UAE failed to say anything. Even as they knew what was happening and instead waited 2 full days to say anything at all. Now think about what a stretch that is. That all of this is happening and for 2 days, no one said a word. This seems like what we were watching was a game of chicken. So after they lost the illegal oil that they were trying to steal, whether that's the U.S. or somebody else, after this, they were trying to steal it. They lost it because Iran took it, and Iran didn't say anything about it, as they might have expected. They figured they would announce that the ship had gone missing, allowing the world to speculate, of course, with U.S. nudgings, that it was Iran behind the seizure of, you know, just a normal ship passing through the strait, and not one stealing the oil that was, you know, the U.S. is obviously interested in. Of course, leaving out their involvement in the situation. Then Iran counters with a fake story of a rescue, essentially calling their bluff, which seemed to work. As really, what could they say? No, we know that was not a rescue because that's our illegal ship stealing your oil, so you're lying. And again, this is just complete speculation, but you can see how it makes sense. Why they wouldn't say anything for 2 full days from either side while this was simply something neither wanted to get out the real truth about it, or rather Iran wanted to make sure that the U.S. wouldn't take this story and lie about it like they have every other one before they could prove how this came to pass. And now that they have, you know, ostensibly gathered evidence about what happened, they announced the real story, saying, no, this was a smuggled ship and we'll prove it to you. A story that is quickly, interestingly, covered up and overshadowed by the U.S. taking out an Iranian drone. Or it's possible this is exactly what the U.S. says it is. Until Iran produces some evidence of their claims, as they have tried to before and were blocked by the United States, we must consider that Iran could be lying, for whatever reason. But we must consider the history, and who has a long record of lying and manufacturing fake events, and then consider that in the larger story. And what makes the most sense after everything that we've seen, all the fake and baseless claims that have been shown to be false, the fact that Iran has not done anything like that verifiably in hundreds of years. So what do we have to consider here? What makes the most sense? Who stands to benefit from the way this is playing out? I think you can see clearly what I'm getting at, but I'll let you come to your own conclusions about what makes the most sense. Now, again, this happened at the very same time that this was all being revealed about the ship, the drone being shot down. And the U.S. claimed, of course, it was forced to take down the Iranian drone. But let's look at this story, because it could might not necessarily be designed to cover up the other story. But at the same time, they're in the wrong, in my opinion. U.S. Navy shoots down, which I think is inaccurate, Iranian drone in the Strait of Hormuz, according to Donald Trump. That's where this stems from, by the way. So it could be fake, it could be lying, any number of things. I don't think that's the case, though. Trump announced this in front of the media, and it spread quickly. Now, shortly, this is interesting, that shortly after this ship, the Boxer, entered the Persian Gulf, like it had just entered the area, the U.S. warship shot down the Iranian drone that approached within less than a kilometer, they claim, according to Donald Trump. So just entered in and then shoot down a drone. All coincidence, I'm sure. Now, the U.S. has what they said destroyed, not shot down, but destroyed an Iranian drone in the Strait of Hormuz, asserting that the drone ignored repeated warnings from the USS Boxer to stand down as it neared the ship. Funny how that seems exactly the same as the story that Iranians were saying about the U.S. drone. Maybe there's something to that. Now it says, quote, the Boxer took defensive action against the Iranian drone, which had closed into a near distance, approximately 1,000 yards, ignoring multiple calls to stand down, threatening safety of the ship and ship's crew, Trump said. Now, just so we're clear, there's a frame of reference here. We're talking about 10 football fields, just for some perspective of how far away this drone was. Now, I understand that there's a, you know, how far missiles can go, and the idea that that's not necessarily a safe distance in regard to munitions, but there are places that could hit that location from the land with certain kinds of missiles. So to argue that, oh, well, the drone was within a 10 football fields of this ship, so we were in danger, we had to stop these people. And then considering that Iran has in no way done anything that suggests that they would do this now, haven't attacked another country in 250 years, haven't done anything like this. other than what the U.S. claims they have done, which they haven't proven. There's no reason to think that this drone would do anything other than flying in international waters, as it has every right to. And then recognize that this is a U.S. ship on the other side of the world, right up next to Iran. So who's really in whose territory here? And who has the right to be able to patrol the area with their drones? 10 football fields away from ships that are right next to their country. I mean, just think about that and get some perspective here. Now, the drone was, they said, threatening the safety of the ship and ship's crew by, I guess, flying 10 football fields away from the ship. They didn't claim they shot at it. Didn't claim they did anything but just fly within that distance. This is according to the president, adding that the U.S., quote, reserves the right to defend our personnel, facilities, and interests. Well, good. I'm glad you had to make sure to tell us that you have the right to defend yourself. Why does this keep happening? Does anyone in the world think that anyone anywhere doesn't have the right to defend themselves when they're attacked? This is basic, basic stuff here, people. The reason somebody says we have the right to defend ourselves is to plant in your mind that they're already defending themselves. So when that next thing happens, they say, yeah, we told you we were going to defend ourselves. Same thing Israel's doing. Seems like the United States has taken a page right out of Israel's book. You don't need to reiterate that you have the right to defend yourself when attacked. The reason you say that is to counter and make it look like you were defending when you really weren't. That's my opinion. And in this case, to claim that you were defending yourself by shooting down a drone that didn't do anything other than fly within 10 football fields of your ship, that's not defending yourself. That's attacking while you're on somebody else's area, given international waters. Well, on the other side of the world. Now, of course, oil futures jumped on the news, of course, climbing 34 cents a barrel to reel in some of the day's 2.6% losses, they claim. Showing you how ridiculously tied this stuff is. Oh my God, we shot down a drone, which means bad things are happening. Oh, oil prices are going to go up. Oh, our economy is so directly tied to war and conflict. It makes me sick. We have to recognize that. We shoot down a drone. Oh, everybody's money. Everything's going up. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Now, the drone was destroyed using electronic jamming, they said, according to a U.S. defense official, which would argue why they said destroyed and not shot down. Which, I don't know if that's going to be relevant in the days to come, but it's important to consider that they claim they didn't shoot it, but electronically jammed it and likely it crashed, I would assume. Now, Trump also called on the other countries, I guess just anyone listening, to, quote, condemn Iran's attempts to disrupt freedom of navigation and global commerce in the Strait of Hormuz. You know, that strait that's right along the coastline of Iran, hundreds of miles away, for maybe more than that, from the United States. Yeah, but, you know, they're the ones over there saying that they have to stop what they're doing in their territory. Now, is this what happened? Did Iran disrupt freedom of navigation? I mean, we don't know for sure, but what we do know is definitely a disruption of freedom of navigation. Shooting down a drone in international airspace, half a world away from U.S. territory, that is disrupting freedom of navigation. But maybe Iran did too, but you know what we should do is wait for the evidence to come out and then make our decision, instead of blindly going along with people who have lied repeatedly throughout the past. Just some advice, friendly advice. But at the end of the day, Javad Zarif made the best point. To put this into context, this is his tweet that he put out today and says, you know, just simply reminder. Take a look. The United States on one side of the world, and Iran on the other side of the world. So who's really where and who's really in other people's territory? Realize they shot that drone down way over there near Iran. And they want you to think that they were defending themselves. Just something to consider. Now, especially with this story, in the way this has all panned out, we need to be more skeptical than ever. I think that's obvious. But what I think the way that this looks to me is that this was Iran, in a way, playing the game that the U.S. set up. They created this game of lies and illusions and information war by starting to try, by creating and manufacturing events that was pretty damn clear didn't even happen. At the very least, didn't happen by Iran's hand. And so here we have, just like Moon of Alabama pointed out, they're simply stepping up to play the game. Thinking, okay, you want to play this? Then we're going to make it impossible for you. And playing it within the boundaries that the U.S. laid out. Does that make it right? Of course not. We're now getting into a time where these governments are carrying out illegal actions behind the scenes to try to force each other's hand and playing a game of chicken with people's lives. It's ridiculous. This is why I don't support any government. But what we need to see is where this started and who initiated this. that forced them in a position, if this story is to be believed, that they felt the need to cover this story up until they could have evidence in their hand, because they knew how aggressively it would be misrepresented by the media and by the U.S. government and their allies, just like every other time before. So what I caution now, as always, is patience, skepticism. Wait for evidence to come out that we can prove, or rather Iran can potentially prove, that yes, look, we can prove this was a smuggling ship. And potentially, who was trying to smuggle their oil? Interesting. Of course, we'll follow up as more comes out about this story. Now, moving on to the next story, which is some interesting developments in regard to Jeffrey Epstein. Just one case. There's a lot going on around the story, as I've continued to point out. A lot of it is speculation. A lot of it's about who may be brought down. And all. There's so much that people are talking about. And what I'm trying to draw you into is the facts developing in this case. This coming from Zero Hedge. This is interesting to me. Camouflaged Israeli ex-prime minister pictured entering Epstein's mansion the same day as hotties show up, which is kind of a tasteless title, to be honest. But the point is, especially knowing that some of these women are likely abused, if you're, you know, understand how the history of this man. But the second part of that story aside, I'm interested in the simple fact that we have documented evidence of a prime minister of Israel secretly, obviously not wanting to be seen, sneaking into this man's mansion after he was already convicted and charged of these crimes. So he's well aware, mind you, that this man is a deviant, pled guilty, soliciting prostitution from a minor. And to me, this would suggest an obvious tie to some level to the Israeli government, which that can mean whatever you want it to mean. Plenty of people will make that into, oh, he's Mossad or some other thing. But what we can see is that there is a tie, at least to this man who was a prime minister of Israel. And that's interesting. Now, this is a former Israeli prime minister. I think it's pronounced Ehud Barak. E-H-U-D, was photographed entering Jeffrey Epstein's Manhattan mansion in January 2016, wearing, obviously, a camouflage scarf around his face. Now, the same day, they claim, as a bunch of young women showed up, which they're trying to claim there was something, you know, obviously, the connection they're trying to make there, something weird was going on, which is important as well. But what I want you to focus on is the simple fact that there's an obvious tie to a prime minister of Israel and Jeffrey Epstein. Now, that could mean either that this guy's also a deviant who's going there for whatever illicit reasons, or possibly that this man could be Mossad. Something to consider. Or simply intelligence. Now, the former prime minister, who has actually formed a new party to try and unseat current Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, which is a large reason why this is coming up, I argue, admitted to the Daily Beast that he had indeed, and so he admitted this, by the way, been to Epstein's New York residence and the financier's infamous, you know, Orgy Island in the Caribbean. He's been there, but he called it Pedophile Island, which is interesting how that would be something I probably would have been censored for saying years ago, even though that was the truth. And now this is the mainstream media calling it Pedophile Island. It's interesting. But he insists that he's, quote, never met Epstein in the company of women and young girls, which could be true. But it's interestingly damning that he's there at all. Everyone powerful now tried to distance themselves from this man, when arguably all the way up until now, they also knew everything that we knew and didn't care about it until it became public knowledge. Now, Barak, who served as Israel's prime minister from 1999 to 2001 and later defense minister from 2007 to 2013, all years during which this stuff was actively happening, received millions of dollars from Epstein as an investment in his company. I believe it's pronounced Carbine with a Y, which makes geolocation software for emergency services. Now, Barak wrote on Facebook last weekend that he's trying to break off relations with Epstein. Gee, I wonder why. He says, quote, as soon as the present charges related to Epstein became known, I instructed my lawyers to examine the options we have for expelling the company associated with Epstein from this partnership. Yeah, I'm sure we're going to examine our, you know, just if you wanted to, you would just expel him. Yeah, just examine the options. We'll touch back a couple years later when you guys all forget about this. Meanwhile, the partnership goes on. Right, that's my take anyway, which is the typical corruption. Of course, Barak still took money in 2014 from the convicted pedophile and registered sex offender, which is publicly available information at the time. So this guy right now saying that, you know, we pumped our brakes and we tried to do this, but in fact, the next year he still took money from him. So obviously didn't care that much until now it's becoming public knowledge. This just shows you, peek through the crack in the door of this disgusting network of people that either are aware of it and don't care or are taking part in it. Either way, didn't say a word until now it's starting to come out. Now, in some good news, Jeffrey Epstein was denied bail on Thursday, today, despite his legal team's best efforts to convince Judge Richard Berman that he isn't a flight risk, which is just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life, which I said the first day that this was coming around, because that's exactly what he is, a flight risk. And of course, instead of staying in his $77 million mansion, which would have been a horrible thing, he'll be staying here. I don't know about you, but I think that's some pretty damn good news. Now recognize that regardless of the claims now, this is a convicted sex offender who didn't actually serve any time, in my opinion. So I'm happy about this, that this man who deserves to be in prison for the rest of his life for what he's done to these people, who's had a life of luxury allowed by the elite class that doesn't want to keep people, hold people accountable, will now be staying in this little cell. I find that to be fantastic news. Now, in some foreign policy news, a very interesting thing was just said by Turkey, which I think vindicates something we've been talking about for a while now. Pentagon fears Turkey to retaliate, weird, against U.S. troops in Syria over new sanctions. Retaliate. So the Pentagon is warning a NATO ally not to attack it. And this isn't even new. This kind of thing has popped up before. And I've said this in the past, that I've argued this kind of thing was like a fake issue designed to divert the tension from the fact that both of these group NATO allies are equally and illegally occupying Syrian territory. Instead of considering that they're both breaking the law, we just argue, oh no, NATO allies are going to fight if they keep encroaching on Syria's territory. But of course, we ignore that they're illegally there. But that was part of it to me. But now it seems like, in a large way, this rift developing between the U.S. and Turkey is very real and growing. Whether it was real before or not, we can see that it's happening now. And guess why? Because Turkey chose to buy a better product. God forbid. What terrible people. Well, in fact, I would argue Erdogan and some of his collective are pretty bad people. But it's funny that that's a bad thing. How dare you buy a better product from a group that, as a U.S. adversary, right? We're talking about the S-400s from Russia. Instead of the THAAD missiles, they're more expensive, less accurate. Yeah, but let's force them to buy our product that we, you know, was created by the lowest bidder instead of a better product that goes further. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. They force them into it. And because they want to try Russia's product that's better, the U.S. is now attacking its own allies, which, again, we've also been talking about, even in regard to the JCPOA and the EU. The U.S. is isolating itself, maybe intentionally for all we know, but clearly attacking. It's eating itself at this point. Now, as expected, Turkey blasted the White House. Their prior announcement that we didn't actually talk about at the time, but that it had killed Turkey's involvement in the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter program after Ankara received its first batch of S-400 Russian-made air defense components starting last week, which we did talk about. Now, Turkey's foreign ministry called on the U.S. to rectify its mistake, they called it, which I highly doubt it was a mistake. It says, quote, "This unilateral step," Turkey says, "is incompatible with the spirit of alliance," which I agree with, "but here's what gets important," and they say it does not rely on any legitimate justification. That is powerful, because it's a NATO ally, it is a U.S. ally, and what they're basically saying here is that what you're doing, casting sanctions on us, removing us from a deal that we're involved in, or rather a project, is they don't have legitimate justification to do so. Now, I'm focusing on the sanctions aspect. Just because Turkey chooses to buy a product from somebody the U.S. doesn't want them to, the U.S. has no authority to do this. They decide to sanction even their allies. The point being, and this is the truth, they do not have legitimate justification to do so, or the authority. They just do it anyway, because they have the economic power, which is why everyone's fleeing from the U.S. dollar right now. Because I'm sure that's best for American interest, right? Ridiculous. So let's just strong arm everybody into doing what we want, because our actions are driving them away anyway. But Turkey's right. They do not have legitimate justification to do this. But of course, this might be acknowledged as right in regard to a NATO ally, but this is no different than what they're doing with the EU or with Iran or with Syria. They don't just get to sanction groups because they're doing things they don't want them to do. That's not how this works. They're doing it anyway because they're breaking the law in every single act that they're doing like this. Violating international law, violating resolutions and treaties, they don't care. And now here's Turkey calling them out because it's finally coming home to their allies and their NATO allies. Now he says, quote, "We call on the United States to come back to this mistake that it will cause irreparable wounds in our strategic relations," which is clearly what's going to happen. And this is something people have been theorizing has slowly been happening for a while, that Turkey's being driven into the arms of U.S. adversaries. Now, it's also interesting, you know, the White House stated, while confirming it would indefinitely block transfers of the F-35, quote, "Turkey's decision to purchase Russian S-400 air defense systems renders its continued involvement with the F-35 impossible," which is probably not a bad deal for them, to be honest. I'm actually not familiar with what any investments that Turkey may or may not have in this project, which could be why it's a problem for them. But the F-35, as we've talked about before, is probably one of the biggest blunders of U.S. military history, a $1 trillion mess up. It's, you know, arguably, some people say, like, as you can see in this article, it says that, you know, he's probably not saying that, this plane might be actually hackable and leave them vulnerable. But we'll leave that out. Right? It's a plane that has spent over like $1 trillion on that is just not a good plane. And, you know, as far as many people would say, I'm not an expert in this field, but I've heard all the talk. What's funny is that coming from Turkey, kicking him out of this deal, they might be even saying, you know, who cares at this point? But the sanctions, I think, are what's important. And I'm just talking off the top here. Turkey probably cares about this deal. They probably have some investment therein. But the point is that the U.S. does not have the right to do this in regard to sanctions because Turkey wants to buy a better product from someone the U.S. doesn't like. Now, they went on to add that the F-35 cannot coexist with a Russian intelligence collection platform that will be used to learn about its advanced capabilities. Now, actually, that, aside from all the BS they always spew, that actually makes sense. Now, you can understand why they'd be concerned if they were actually concerned about this, which I don't think this is what they're actually concerned about, that maybe when these things are in the same location, there could be some potential for them to learn about their capabilities, which I argue today, I don't think that's a secret, to be honest, anyway, but I don't think that's really what it is. I think it has to do with not allowing Russia to benefit in any way, shape, or form, especially for money that the U.S. thinks it's theirs, right? You're an ally. That's our money. You're supposed to buy THAAD missiles. So we're going to sanction you and pull you out of this deal. Now, Turkey has responded to Trump's stance by saying it's unfair, which is kind of a juvenile response. But he says, according to state-run TRT World, excluding Turkey, one of the main partners from the F-35 program, is unfair. And the claim that S-400 system will weaken the F-35 is invalid, the foreign ministry said, which I agree with. Now, meanwhile, at a moment when obviously this looming conflict between Turkey, the Syrian army, and Damascus, and in regard to Idlib, is increasing. We just talked about Turkey is encroaching on the border. It's about to explode into something that's already been, you know, percolating for quite a while. Now, the Pentagon issued a separate statement yesterday demanding that the Turkish army avoid striking U.S. troops in the region amid this Turkish buildup along the border, which is a very interesting thing for them to say. Like, you know, you to warn them away from potentially attacking U.S. forces, it shows you that that's either something to make you think this is what's happening or their relationship is not what it once was. Now, the statement warned the U.S. would consider any, quote, unilateral actions into northeastern Syria, particularly targeting U.S. troops, as unacceptable. So now they stepped into, you just simply can't do anything in this area, just like they were doing to Syria and Russia before. No, you can't. They didn't say, no, you can't go in and attack civilians. They said, if you take any kind of action in this terrorist-held Idlib area that we're protecting, then that's going to be a problem. I wonder why it is that the U.S. constantly comes to this point when anyone seems to try to get into Idlib. No, you can't not attack civilians. You just simply can't come into this area. I think there's more going on here and more evidence that might be found that the U.S. desperately does not want to get out. Or simply they're just trying to save their last terrorist stronghold, which allows them to pretend they're fighting terrorism in Syria. You know, who knows? At the end of the day, now they're saying not even Turkey can go into Idlib, or it's going to be unacceptable. So we can see where this is going. Because I can tell you right now, Turkey does not care at all what President Trump has to say. Now, for the final story of the day, and some definite good news, but I still don't think it's going to pan out the way we might want it to. But I did say I would follow up on this coming from Antimedia, entitled House Votes to Block Arms Sales to Saudi Arabia, UAE. And this, again, we have to recognize how often this happens, and even how often members of Congress will vote or even create bills that they don't even agree with, knowing that it will not happen, knowing that Trump will veto it, knowing that the other members of Congress will never allow it to happen, for the simple purpose of making it look like they're on this side. This is how this game is played, understand. Some of them actually do believe it. There's plenty of people there that do actually want these things to stop. But we have to recognize how often we're lied to about the ins and outs of this process. And at the end of the day, regardless, that Trump has already made it very clear he's going to veto these things anyway. So this whole process seems moot to me. It shows you how broken our system is when this is, we spend all this time and all this energy and all this discussion to try to pass bills in both the Senate and the House for Trump to simply say, nope. No. And here's what's ridiculous. He's already telling you right now that he's going to veto it, which just kind of makes the whole process moot. It's ridiculous. But some of these have passed both houses is important, or both sides of Congress, important to bring it to your attention. Now, this was yesterday. The House of Representatives passed bills expressing disapproval of U.S. arms sales to both Saudi Arabia and the UAE. Now, the bills passed 238-190. With four Republicans supporting the bills. A third vote also passed 237-190. Now, the House bills actually mirror Senate versions which were passed last month over the objection of the Trump administration, of course. Now, Donald Trump has threatened to veto them, as he always has, making it very clear that these people's lives and all the suffering and all the illegal actions, it's all second to profit. And Congress, of course, seems to lack the two-third majority needed to override a veto. Showing you again how simply broken the system is. And I would say intentionally so, in order to maintain the illusion that sure, we're trying to make things happen, but ultimately the system is the way it is and we cannot. But we're trying, right? Democracy. Now, President Trump's very public desire to protect arms sales at the expense of human life, morals, the law. Even after the Saudi murder of Jamal Khashoggi, even after they're openly starving 20 million people to death. Has been viewed as, you know, this whole effort has been viewed as, you know, distasteful by many, to put it very, very lightly. It really ripped that fighting for democracy mask right off, which is why, in some degree, this has been a good thing that we can see what this really is about. Of course, Trump administration officials tried to spin the sales as being primarily about fighting Iran, which, you know, falls flat today. Because we've already shown you that the WikiLeaks information that shows you that they already know that the Houthis are not connected to Iran, they say it anyway. Because it gives them the lie, or at least the flimsy lie, to maintain their illegal actions abroad. But we're fighting Iran. But remember that even in itself, if it was true, is also not a legitimate reason. There's no justifiable reason to say we're fighting Iran that allows you to illegally invade other countries. The reason they're saying that is because they're trying, as much as they pretend they're not, to force this into the authorization for use of military force. To force this into the ideas that we're fighting terrorism. That Iran's terrorism. That's why they made the Revolutionary Guard terrorists, in far as they're concerned. This is building blocks of lies, all leading towards Iran. I don't know how that's not shockingly obvious, but apparently to some it's not. Based on the path, the witch path, the Persia documents, Project for New American Century, and General Wesley Clark, and on and on and on. How many times we've been told this is about to happen, or in the works, or building toward? How many times Israel's been caught lying about it? We need to wake up and see how this is really happening. And to end today on a humorous note, if not slightly frustrating, speaking of congressional moves, and I just talked about this on the show with Brian yesterday, but I just thought this was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen in my life. After all of this has been happening, even before 2016, after people have been bleeding about election meddling, Russian hacking, even within this country, talking about people within our political system manipulating the elections, manipulating the votes, everything. And here we come to find out that, guess what? It's not even a federal crime to hack voting systems. Now, one, this shows you how shockingly behind the times our system is in regard to, you know, electronics and where the world is actually now versus where it was 50 years ago. Showing you how much they're doing other things, you know, war, naming post offices, you know, what Congress does. And so, and they finally maybe come around after the fact and go, wait a minute, is that even a federal crime? Oh, maybe we should make it a crime to actually hack systems as we're screaming about election hacking. I could not believe this. And now also understand that right now this means that it's, you know, also not even a law yet. It still has to pass the other house. It has to pass Trump's desk. So right this moment, it's not even a federal crime to hack voting systems. Meanwhile, this has been a focal point of discussion for this country for years. You can't make this stuff up. This system is beyond broken. the people within it are beyond broken. And it's time for us as the American people specifically to stand up and speak your damn mind and show people that we don't buy this stuff, that we recognize that they're lying, that we see through their illusions. And once we have enough people aware of what's really going on, that's when real change begins to happen. And that's what we're driving toward. Now, thank you for being here. Thank you for being a part of that change and for waking people up and spreading the word. You just can't get that out enough today. But thank you for being here. If you'd like to support the channel, there's links in the show notes to all of our PayPal and Patreon and Bitbacker or any way you'd like to support the channel. But as I always say, just getting the information out there and putting it in front of someone that might not see it is the best thing you can possibly do. I love you all. Thank you for being here today. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.